I've long said that while not a native Chicagoan, I got here to my adopted home just as quickly as I could. And upon arrival, I almost immediately identified one of my very favorite things about Chicago. And it is this. It's that because it does get so bitterly cold here, we live like it's our last day on Earth just as soon as warm weather allows. It's without a doubt my favorite of many things I love about this city. And since we pick one topic and focus on it all night for each episode of the Saturday Night Special, this week I wanted to capture that and name it and celebrate it all evening tonight. That certain joie de vivre that sweeps us up in summer and motivates us to do and be and live a tiny bit more in the summer, and the activities that we can only really do on the borrowed time of warm weather. Is there one word for that? Not really. But let's describe it. It's this. It's squeezing every last drop of activity and sunshine out of a summer day, like a long walk in the woods with great conversation, like a walking tour that takes you back in time for a while, a bike ride on trails to get lost in our thoughts to emerge inspired and refreshed. It's that. That kind of thing that you can sort of do in spring and sort of do in the fall, but in summer, it's downright glorious magic. So since we name a theme of every episode of Saturday Night Special, we found ourselves stuck this week for how exactly to capture that ode to summer activities in a single word or phrase. We being the esteemed producer Tom Hush and I, we knew that we wanted to talk about those cool things that you get to do outside in the summer that are destinations, not concert events and street festivals per se, long may they reign, but the sort of things that are good activities for our bodies and health, but also for our minds and our creativity. So there we sat in the offices brainstorming a title and saying body, mind, summer over and over until, well, body, mind, summer it is. So tonight is a love letter to glorious Chicago summer things that keep our bodies moving and soaking up sunshine, our minds busy, and our spirits lifted. Whatever that's called and whatever it's been called in the past, we love it. I'm Amy Guth, and that's all coming up tonight on the Saturday Night Special.
Live from the biggest small town in America.
This is WGN Chicago, radio home of millions throughout Mid-America.
Radio, well, radio became the Pied Piper to a strange new world.
Time to climb up on our big shoulders and get inside our massive heart.
This is the Saturday Night Special with Amy Guth.
720 WGN, you heard the woman. This is the Saturday Night Special. I'm Amy Guth. Thanks for being with us tonight. Tonight on the program, we are going to be talking about a concept that we cannot totally name, but that nonetheless is a love letter to things outside in Chicago in the summer that keep us entertained and inspired, active and creative, expanding our minds and exploring our city anew. Regular contributor Max Grinnell will be in studio with us tonight to talk about all kinds of glories of summers in Chicago's history. And we'll talk with a theater company who combines hiking and Shakespeare, a special glimpse behind the scenes of the reinvigorated 606 Trail, and a look up to the rare celestial event we get as an added bonus this summer that we haven't seen in decades. We have a lot to do, a lot to discuss, and a lot to learn tonight, and have a pretty packed show, so I cannot swear that we're going to be able to take too many calls, but 312-981-7200 and a esteemed producer Tom Hush will be the first voice on the other end of the line if you do have a comment. But you can also find me on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and all that good stuff. We'll be right back to get this conversation underway on 720 WGN.
Hot town, summer in the city, back of my neck getting dirt and gritty. Bend down, isn't it a pity? Doesn't seem to be a shadow in the city. All around.
720 WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth here on the Saturday Night Special. Tonight is like a big old love letter to all the cool stuff that happens in and around Chicago during the summertime. It's stuff you can do in the spring and the fall, probably not in the winter, but it's just so cool and fun and not freezing to do it in the summer. So we have a very special guest with us tonight. Co-hosting along with us in studio tonight is Max Grinnell, regular contributor to this program. He's the guy that we call anytime we're like, what happened in this spot? way back when, because he's the urbanologist. He's a historian and professor and writer and traveler, and you do so many things. I don't even know how you fit it all on a business card, but welcome back to the show, Max.
Amy, it's good to be back.
I'm glad you're here. So when we think about things that happen in Chicago and around this area in the summer, I think a lot of times immediately go to stuff like Lollapalooza and Taste of Chicago and those kind of things. But I think below the surface, there's a lot of cool stuff that really, really just kind of speaks to natural environments here. And a little bit later, we're going to be talking with some people that do some very cool theater and park districts and cool things like that. But when we rewind that and think back about things we used to do in Chicago yesteryear, where do you think of and what do you think of immediately?
I think for so many Chicagoans, if you had come to the city really between 1904 and 1967 and you were a Northsider, you would have thought of Riverview Amusement Park, which of course has been changed into light industrial police station.
Right.
But for so many people, it was a cheap way to get out and about and experience that thing that folks had seen at Coney Island. Folks had seen other part of the United States. It was a day or night out and kind of low cost. You pay as you went. Definitely one of the kind of transformative urban experiences in Chicago. And of course, I always like to think of places like the Washington Park Racetrack.
Yeah.
Which did business for 25, 30 years. What's now the Washington Park Subdivision. And they also had one of the nation's most famous horse races, the American Derby. Until horse gambling was outlawed in 1905 in Illinois. They later went to the south suburbs, to Homewood, but this was kind of another place to see the swells, a place to be seen and kind of be around other folks, which of course we have analogs today, Oak Street Beach, sure. North Avenue Beach.
Yeah. I also love kind of those, I don't want to say urban legends because they're not that big, but kind of little details about. Occasionally you'll run across a building, especially along the lake, and people say, well, it's situated weirdly. It's angled strangely because it was pre-air conditioning and they needed the lake breeze and the lake curves right here. So they needed that. And I just think there's so many, interesting details of early Chicago that are so cool about this city.
Absolutely. And if you think of AC not being common until after World War II, and certainly electricity not being common until the second or third decade of the 20th century, being out and about and close to the water then is now. We've seen the transformation of the Chicago River in the last couple decades. I mean, nothing short of amazing. But to be out on the water is at least a little bit of respite from the humidity.
Yeah, a little bit. I've kayaked the entire Chicago River.
Oh,
I took 2 summers to do it. I did it in pieces. And it was a really cool experience because I don't see Chicago the same way anymore. It's fascinating that even, areas kind of that stretch near Roosevelt where you're getting close to that Target. That
of course.
Back there is beautiful and wooded. And I saw these beautiful birds and all this gorgeous stuff, and I'm like, wait, that's Target, that's where I am. But we think of that in terms of the streets, but just below, it's so lovely and very, very beautiful. There's also some parts of the river that need our help desperately.
Yes, yes. Triage, a type of river triage.
There were some areas that I thought, I don't know if I can turn this kayak around fast enough, so I'm just going to paddle slowly and not get water on me was my whole plan there. But I think that's kind of always been the way of Chicago, that it gets so darn cold that the outside stuff is so celebrated in such a lovely way here.
Yeah, absolutely. And to kind of be, as we've seen, I mean, a few blocks away from us in River North, to be up and out, the rooftop bar phenomenon, kind of even thinking about places like Midway Gardens, which is south of the Midway Plaisance, does not exist anymore, but is designed by Frank Lloyd Wright. And existed for, a fraction of the 20, 25 years. But as a place to be outside, dance, have a beer, et cetera. So some of these things will always be with us.
It was kind of the River North of its time.
The River North of its time.
Right.
I don't know how many popped collars there were, but.
Any white sunglasses.
Oh, goodness. Good. I'm sure the people were as beautiful then as they are now.
Sure, they were probably a little bit less hair product, but and maybe a little less Axe body spray. But I'm sure lovely, minus the body glitter. All good. All good. Well, I think that is really such kind of an interesting bit. So as we look to some of the other guests that we're going to have on the show tonight, we're going to be talking with someone from the 606. We're going to be talking with someone from the Adler Planetarium, and also someone who is on the board of directors for a theater company in forest preserves and in parks and at the Morton Arboretum. I think that's, even that is kind of an interesting beat, if, especially the 606, when we think about what it was, what it is now, and what they're, you know, looking ahead to do with it, I think is so fascinating.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those kind of transformative, egalitarian spaces, like all are welcome. And I think of how this city and other cities are divided up. You know, we have libraries and parks that really say, you know, you have $1 million, you have $0, all are welcome.
And the 606 in particular, I mean, Chicago by its design is so incredibly segregated. That's something we've talked about many times on this show, a couple of times with you on this show. And it's, you know, it's frustrating because there are many factors, but one of them is geography. It's the way the city is laid out. And the 606 is kind of an interesting uniting force through a lot of neighborhoods that aren't normally, you know, accessed so quickly and in one swoop in that way.
Yeah, absolutely. It's interesting you mention that, because I was thinking about the White City Amusement Park, which is around in the early to mid 20th century in the south side of Chicago, what is now King Drive. And the White City was marketed specifically for whites only. And of course, as time changed, that area became predominantly African-American. But it was, you know, they still tried to kind of maintain that kind of exclusive segregated quality to the amusement park, which ostensibly should be open to everyone.
Yeah. Yeah. What other, when we are looking at kind of lost pieces of Chicago or things that have changed so dramatically, you know, what are those other big landmarks that come to mind for you, maybe even suburban ones?
I mean, there's certainly the list of amusement parks that is gone because of land pressures, you know, larger housing developments is quite long. I think there are other, some of these amusement parks in the city that have come and gone are worth thinking about. White City is one of them. Midway Gardens is one of them. And I think succumbing to really changes in how we kind of live every day, technology. The thing I think about, kind of that big picture thing, thinking about your question, which is a wonderful one, is how have our inside spaces, our domestic spaces, become for most people pretty darn good? Why step out? You know, I mean, besides kind of the casual encounter, which I sometimes encounter people are nervous about, which I understand, but why go anywhere? I think that's a challenge in thinking of the guests that will talk to later in the 21st century, is how do you get people out? We're so excited to leave, you know, the first 50 degree day,
right,
in March or April or earlier now. You know, like how do we still engage people in those public spaces?
That is a really interesting point. I think public space has meant a lot of different things, and I think it means even, there's even more layers on it right now politically when we think of public space, even talking about what we have the right to do in public and say in public. And I know there were some states that were even looking at legislation that was going to curb somewhat people's right to protest, of where they could do so and how that would go. And I know that was a big topic. So even public space is a fascinating topic that I feel like we could do a whole show just on public space, because it is interesting that, you know, the definitions and what we value in public and private shifts so much over generations.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I think of recent spaces, I'm kind of, we haven't thought of it, talked about it yet, but even places like Millennium Park, which is open to the public, but sometimes closed for private events. Mm-hmm. So, you know, who has the right and the access to those spaces too?
Yeah, I have a feeling access and right will come up a lot today. I think those are interesting topics and kind of interesting through lines when we think about public space, because immediately class issues do come into it. And in Chicago, the way, just as we said, the way it's laid out, there are segregation issues in this town. So I think we will be looking at that. But then when we shift away from physical spaces a little bit, and we look at the Adler and the museum resources that we have here, we're going to talk with someone from the Adler here in a little bit, in the 8 o'clock hour, specifically about the eclipse and how that's we haven't seen something so widespread like this eclipse since the late 70s. And so it'll be such an interesting event and kind of our fascination with space. And I think that's another time where it'll be interesting to compare. Here we are, like Amazon is trying to make cargo ships to supply Mars colonies, you know, and all of these things are happening right now as we're thinking about space in a new way. Whereas I think perhaps in days gone by, it was a matter of gazing upon possibility. Now it's like conquering it.
Right.
We've shifted in that way too.
Yeah, that's a huge transformation. I think the one that you describe is kind of more mind expansive. And I think egalitarian again, you know, kind of thinking about like, how are we all part of that rather than how can we just make money off it?
Right. Oh, it's always about money, isn't it? Always, always, always. And so I wonder, though, about how, you know, yesteryear Chicagoans would have, we haven't seen this particular type of eclipse since the late 70s, but even before that, years before, just as technology catches up with us and as we know more about the skies and the oceans and things like that, our attitudes change from more, away from a place of complete bewilderment and wonder and like, what is that happening and what is that celestial event, to, I think, again, that the way you describe what motivated people to go out, I think people gathered more to see things like, celestial event, like eclipses, even minor ones, not as big as this one.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's generally true. And I think something that we haven't talked about specifically yet, but also how much leisure time did folks have? And it was not a ton, before the rise of labor unions and, kind of OSHA and other kind of, I think, really wonderful protections for laborers, is most folks didn't have a lot of free time. So, maybe Sunday, half a Sunday after religious services. So a pretty kind of small and resolute time to kind of truly recreate, along from household chores, taking care of children, taking care of extended family, kind of a pretty small chunk.
Yeah.
And for lots of people, it's still a small chunk. So I think that's interesting to see how people choose to gather for things like The Taste,
right,
or its predecessor, Chicago Fest, which was on Navy Pier for 6 years. Kind of how do people come together for those
type
of things?
And that's interesting, though, that when we think about free time and all of that, because now it's almost, I've said this many times on the air, we're in this kind of culture of this cult of busyness, where it is chronic busyness, and you show your value by answering "how are you" with "I'm crazy busy."
Right.
You show that you're important in that
way. You're signaling to people. I've done it. I think everyone's done it. And I think kind of one of the things is like, what about the freedom to just to do nothing, to be lazy, dare I say.
Right. Whereas I think in years gone by, leisure class was something to be desired. It was something people wanted to be, to have that kind of time.
Absolutely. And I think there's something to be said. And I always tell my students in my urban studies classes, we're trying to slow down, and I give them kind of opportunities to think about the built environment. The city. Mm-hmm. Did a Michigan Avenue tour last week, and I even give them physical post-it notes to say, put this on something you see in the city with a question on it. And they're like, what? This is decidedly low tech. What are you doing? Shouldn't we be doing this with big data? And I said, no, this is a place to slow down and ask a question. Because we're all, as you say, everyone kind of a cult of busyness,
yeah,
et cetera.
What kind of questions do your students put on buildings?
On Alexander Calder's flamingo, one said, why is this sculpture brilliant red and everything around it is kind of this dark iron and steel? Another great question, we were at IIT last week, and a student said, why does this area of the city feel so suburban? Which is, it's intentional that it feels that way. You're like, oh my goodness, there's no three flats or six flats or other things around. I mean, there's the L that goes to the middle of campus. So I think those are great starting points for conversations about any city, Chicago, Paducah, et cetera. Just kind of slow down and think about whether we're thinking about leisure, whether we're thinking about urban planning, and we have a lot of fun with it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. If you stop and think about it and start talking it out, those issues that we've just raised, access, leisure time, class, all these things start to kind of emerge and point to how those things shape what we see and what we value and all the things that make our city our city. all interesting stuff. See, this always happens. We take the simplest topic and we start to pull it apart, and suddenly it's a very big one with lots of stuff propping it up and hidden below the surface. We're talking with Max Grinnell, historian, professor, the urbanologist. You can find him on social media and online, the urbanologist. Go there, follow him, connect with him. He's full of good information. And he's hanging out with us in studio all night. It's going to be great. So we're talking all about big things to do in the summer. Big loose topic, seems light, but in fact, as you just heard, not so much. So we're going to take a little break, get you to news, and when we come back, we're talking with some folks from the 606. Back in just a bit on 720 WGN.
Hey, what's up? This is Quentin Mabel from Agro Chicago, and you're listening to 720 with Amy Goof.
WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth here on the Saturday Night Special. Thanks for being with us tonight. Little Quentin Mavels from iGrow Chicago, who was with us last week. A little of his voice. That's always good to hear. So we are talking about all the cool stuff to do in and around Chicago in the summertime. And I am super excited. Our next guest here joining us in studio, Caroline O'Boyle, is here. She's the Director of Programs and Partnerships for the 606. Welcome to the show, Caroline. So glad you're with us tonight.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
And Max Grinnell is hanging out with us all night in studio. So he is got his urbanology and historic knowledge here in studio. So we have so much knowledge in the studio right now. I'm super excited about this. So Caroline, the 606 is such a cool thing. We were touching on it just a little bit. And what I super love about it is that it is a wonderful connecting device in through neighborhoods that are otherwise not interacting very often. And all with all those access points, it is a wonderful thing, but it's also kind of this cool metaphor for connecting neighborhoods and human beings right here in our city.
Right. And that was a very intentional part of the design. I think that what's interesting about, I have a historian here to back me up on this, but the original Bloomingdale line ran at the street level, and thousands of people every year were being killed by at the train crossings. And so in the late 1800s, the city mandated that all of the train tracks throughout the city should be elevated. And in elevating the tracks, it prevented the train deaths, but it then created this wall, a physical wall that was separating neighborhoods that had once been united. Mm. And so that's one of the great things about the 606, is that by inviting people up and having so many access points, it really is bringing the community back together.
That is such a cool detail.
And for those who haven't been there or are not familiar, the 606 is 2.7 miles long. It runs east to west between Ashland and Ridgeway, which is just east of Pulaski. So it's a great spot to go out walking your dog, walking your baby in a stroller, jogging.
So many dogs on there.
Riding your bike. And you see people doing all kinds of locomotion out there.
Yeah, it really is. I've walked it many times. I must admit, I have to confess to you, I live very close to it, and I did not get onto it until quite recently, but I've been back a couple of times already because it's so beautiful and it's so relaxing and it's doable. I mean, yeah. 2.7 miles, it's very doable.
And it's interesting that you should use the word relaxing, because, again, that was an intentional part of the design, is to sort of elevate people above the hustle and bustle of the city streets. And when you're up there, even though it isn't that high, it's, I think, 17 feet off the ground, you just get a different perspective of the city. You're sort of at a treetop level in some kind of way. And I think you just sort of get a perspective shift.
Definitely. Definitely. It's kind of what we were talking about a little bit earlier about in kayaking the Chicago River, how your perspective is so shifted, because particularly I was talking about the area around the Target on Roosevelt. It's so industrial right there, but then you're down on the water and you don't even realize you're near that Target because it's just birds and trees, right. And it's very, very beautiful.
Right. It's kind of the opposite. You're down low on the river, right. And you're up high on the 606.
And the plants are all so beautiful. And I feel like I can identify any plant, and I have been stumped with a few of them on the 606.
Well, the plants are a really important part of the not only the landscape, but the programming. There is a series of serviceberry bushes that are planted along the east-west axis. And what's interesting about that is that the artist Frances Whitehead purposely chose those plants to see if she could demonstrate the effect of Lake Michigan on the bloom cycle of those plants. Mm. Because it's cooler by the lake.
Oh, how interesting.
And so the idea is that the plants, the serviceberry bushes at the west end of the trail, would bloom earlier than those at the east end.
And has that theory held up?
So far. This is our first year of formal observation, but what's really great about that is that we're involving local citizen scientists in collecting the observations and uploading them to the National Phenology Network. So the goal is that we would have 100 years worth of data about when did the service berries bloom, when did they bear fruit, when did the leaves fall.
That's very cool. Instagram, I will offer it up because I think I have Instagrammed quite a few plants on the 606 already. What is the plant at the Humboldt Overlook with the puffy...
I'm not a plant expert.
Okay.
I think it's. Oh, it has the word witch in it.
Okay.
So maybe some plant people who know more than I do.
I have a bunch of sites bookmarked when I get stumped, so I'll have to dig it up. But
I
couldn't figure out what that plant is, and it's fascinating. It's a tall, wonderful shade, but these puffy, beautiful blooms on it.
Yeah. I wish I had studied up on that.
That's okay.
But it's really interesting because the landscape designers, what they did, if you'll notice next time you're up there, they put plants up above where the parkway is down below to kind of continue the green line. So where the boulevard, where it goes over Humboldt Boulevard, there are no plants. And then when it goes over the parkways, that's where you see all the plants.
Oh, that's true.
So it's sort of connecting the stripe.
I love all the thought that's been put into that.
It's so very lovely. Thoughtful design.
It's lovely. It's so lovely. We're talking with Caroline O'Boyle, Director of Programs and Partnerships for the 606. And I'm loving hearing about all this, but there's so much more to do there. We were talking a little bit earlier about how the idea of leisure has changed over generations and how at one point it was so prized to be leisure class, to have leisure time. But now it's sort of a status symbol to say, how are you? Oh, I'm so busy. Now that means I'm very important. And so is there some reckoning there with getting people to do a leisure activity and participate in something like that in this time of chronic busyness?
Well, that's one of the great things about the 606 running so close to a residential neighborhood. Over 80,000 people live within a 10-minute walk of the 606, which, by the way, that's the goal of the Trust for Public Land, is to have everybody in America living within a 10-minute walk of a park. But in Chicago, near the 606, 80,000 people live nearby. And you can just tumble out of your house and go up a ramp. You don't have to get in your car. You don't have to pack up your bike. You're just there. And what we've noticed is that a lot of families are using the 606 for their after-dinner stroll. And you, right now, if you went out there right now, you would see families of all different constellations out there, you know, like a little kid on a trike and the mom, you know, mom pushing a stroller, you know, maybe dad has an older kid who's learning how to, you know, ride a bike. And they're all out there after dinner, just strolling. They feel safe. They feel comfortable. They can wave at their neighbors. And it really does happen that way.
Yeah.
And we have evidence that to back that up. So we see in the after dinner hour, there's a spike in users.
That's very cool. And I've seen that. I've witnessed that. I see people kind of socializing and kind of pulling off to the side to chat for a minute and catching up. And I've even seen, time before I was on there, I saw somebody run into a business associate and they kind of were doing a deal right there. One was going one way, the other was going the other, and they're doing work right there in the middle of it.
Well, for the people who have to be busy, a lot of times people make their business meetings to walk the 606. So instead of sitting in a coffee shop, they'll say, let's do a walk and talk.
I love
and
that.
And a lot of people do that. The other thing, it's a very welcoming place for young people. We have a lot of teenagers who use the 606, and to me that's a great sign of success for a public space. They feel welcomed there, they feel like they belong there, and we love having them. But you can see that there's teens who use it to get back and forth from school, but they also are just enjoying each other's company.
Yeah, just hanging out.
And
if it's like cool enough for the skeptical of everything teen. I feel like it's pretty okay.
I know, right?
Well, we are talking with Caroline O'Boyle, Director of Programs and Partnerships for the 606. We're going to take a little break, but when we come back, I want to talk about some of those programs and those partnerships because there's some really cool stuff I don't want any of you to miss. Max Grinnell, the urbanologist, is also in studio with us back in just a bit on 720 WGN. Hey there, it's Amy Guth, and this is the Saturday Night Special. Thanks for being with us tonight. We are talking about all the cool things to do with our bodies and our minds to inspire us and keep us moving around in the summertime right here in Chicago. We have Max Grinnell in studio with us. He is the urbanologist, talking about all things history and all things urban. And we have Caroline O'Boyle in studio. She's Director of Programs and Partnerships for the 606. And we have been talking all about the 606 and all the cool stuff and singing its praises. One thing I did not yet mention is I really appreciate the heck out of the bumpers on the side, the cushions.
All right.
Man, those are good. And I see little dogs appreciate them too when it's hot because it gets a little warm up there.
And little children.
Yeah. But little dogs, their little paws, the concrete hurts them, and they kind of scuttle over to the side, and they're like, I'm good. I've got my bumper thing to walk on.
It's a two-foot running surface on both sides.
I love it. It's so much better on my back and my knees. I love it. I'm so excited that that is there. But as Director of Programs and Partnerships for the 606, you are doing a lot of stuff, and there's a lot of cool partnerships that I don't know that everyone knows about, so I want to make sure that we talk about those. In particular, around the areas of science and art.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things we really like to do is to highlight the assets that are in the community that the 606 serves. So we've worked really hard to form a lot of partnerships with local organizations, but also organizations citywide. So, for example, we have a partnership with the Adler Planetarium and with Chicago Astronomer. And they come out on the Chicago Astronomer comes out on the second Friday of every month with a big batch of telescopes, and we point them up at the sky. And people who are out there on their evening stroll have no idea that they're going to come across these telescopes. And the look of wonder on the faces not only of the fifth graders seem to really love this a lot, but the 18-year-olds, the 80-year-olds. I mean, to be able to look up at the sky and see the rings of Saturn, it just kind of blows people's minds. And so we're out there on the second Friday of every month, year-round, in January, February, March, even when it's cold.
Oh, that's very cool.
But it's nicer in the summer, I will admit.
Sure.
So we do that. We also have an installation at the Milwaukee Avenue Bridge with an arts organization called Luftwerk. They're also local artists. And they are partnering with some scientists who have developed this array of things, which is going to be a climate monitoring system. And so the lights on the Milwaukee Avenue Bridge are going to be connected to the sensing nodes with the array of things. And ultimately, the colors of the lights on the bridge will reflect what the air quality is.
Mind blown. That is extremely cool. And that's in the works, or that's when is that totally functional?
The lights on the bridge have been installed, but they have not yet been connected to the array of things. That should be happening within the next couple of months.
Oh, that's exciting.
So with the astronomy and with the plant observation that I talked about before and with this, what we're really trying to do is to get people to look at where they are, observe where they are, and to really connect them to their physical environment. We've also formed a partnership with Westtown Bikes and some of the local housing organizations in the neighborhood. And what we realized is that there were some families that were living within a stone's throw of the 606 that didn't have bikes. So we fixed that. And we gave away in the last 2 months 90 bikes to families. The mom, and it was really important to us to give them to the moms, the dads, and the children. Not, you know, everybody wants to give a bike to a kid. But unless the parents are out there biking,
right?
The kids aren't going to be out there biking. And so that's one of the ways we're trying to get people to be active and look at their health. But if you just want to have fun, we have plenty of that too. So all summer, we're partnering with the Chicago Park District's Night Out in the Parks with some of our local organizations, such as Segundo Ruiz Belvis Cultural Center. Mm-hmm. And so they have a whole series of Afro-Latin music that they're presenting at the grade level parks that are adjacent to the 606. We're partnering with Free Street Theater, which is just down the street from the 606. They're doing a play called Los Milagros this summer, and they're tricking out radio flyer wagons and talking to people about everyday miracles.
That's fun.
The Barrel of Monkeys, if anybody doesn't know who the Barrel of Monkeys are, they're a great theater company that takes the writing of school children and transforms it into the most hilarious skits and plays that you've seen. They have a show called That's Weird Grandma. We're gonna have that out in the park. So we have music. Core Power Yoga gives free yoga classes at Churchill Field every Monday. You know, there's just a lot to do.
There is a lot to do.
It sounds fantastic. One thing I've always enjoyed we were talking about was the public art programs.
Right. So we have a major sculpture at the Damon Arts Plaza. Shekiah Booker, who's a New York-based artist, made a sculpture called Brick House 2015. And she's very enigmatic about why she named it that, because it doesn't look anything like a brick house. We also have the graffiti garden at the street level between Central Park and Spalding, where we worked with a group of local artists to curate all the walls, and they've painted murals on a 6-block stretch, and it's really impressive. And we really are hoping to do a lot more public art because it really brings people together, and I think it brings people out. So that's one of the things we want to do more of.
Definitely. You know, what struck me the very first time I went up there was I did not see people walking with their phones.
No. Well, some people do. I mean, it happens. But I think you were saying during the break, when you're walking out there, it kind of frees your mind mm-hmm. in a way for thoughts to come in that if you're staring at your phone.
They're not coming.
You know, and so I think that, you know, the 606 isn't unique in this way, but any place you go that can just shift your perspective pretty dramatically, I think opens you up to new ideas and new ways of thinking.
Absolutely.
And that's what happens when people are out there walking.
More of that. We need a lot more of that. That is really, really excellent. So what can we see? What's coming up on the horizon, and what new things are you hoping to look at in the years to come on the 606?
Well, we have a couple additional parks that we need to build as part of it. At the west end of the trail, which is at Ridgeway, the Trust for Public Land, which is the organization I work for, has purchased a giant glove factory, which is now empty. It was functional right before we purchased it, but they had plans to move. So we bought that property with the idea of turning that into a 4-acre park so that there's a big public space at the west end, just as there is now at the east end.
Right.
So that's one thing. There's also been a lot of talk, and we're really interested in doing this, but it's sort of a long time horizon, of connecting the 606 to the river.
Oh.
So at the east end, we're really looking at how we can get, you know, over the highway, or no, under the highway,
under the
over
highway.
The railroad tracks.
To grandmother's house we go.
To grandmother's house we go. So there's been a lot of excitement about that, and so that's something that we're looking at, too.
Oh, that would be really interesting.
It would be. Programmatically, you know, we had we really like to respond to the community as we hear from them. We heard from a gentleman last week who said that he almost got bitten by a dog, and we need to work harder on, you know, helping the dog owners understand how to be good pet owners out there. And so we thought he had a good idea, and we do have suggestions for people when they're walking out there. Keep your leash tight and on the right is what we mm-hmm. like to say with the dog owners. But then we realized that we haven't been reinforcing that message lately. So at the end of August, we're going to have dog days on the 606. And we're just in the process of formulating that now. And we're going to have a pet parade and reinforce the safety message with the pets.
Oh, my gosh.
That's for the dog days of summer.
Very cute.
And there's two dog-friendly areas mm-hmm. that are part of the 606, both at Churchill and Walsh Parks. So we're working on that now. We think that's going to be fun.
I love it. You've thought of everything. And I really love there's that bike service station I saw someone using that and kind of putting air in their tires and working out some stuff on the bike. Right. That's very important.
Again, that's through a partnership with Westtown Bikes, and they've just been a great partner with us on this whole project. We also do, we like the everydayness of mm-hmm. what happens out on the 606, but sure. we feel like every now and then we need to bump it up. So we have quarterly celebrations that encourage people sort of in a festive way, walk the trail. So we just had our block party about a month ago, which included dozens and dozens of musical processions of all kinds. Mm. In That's September, fun. We're partnering with the Department of Cultural Affairs and Special Events for their International Peace Picnic. And so we're going to have a walk with peace and music where musicians will start at either end of the trail. They'll meet at Humboldt, and then they'll process from the 606 to Humboldt Park, where there's a world music concert going on that day. So people on the 606 will have the opportunity to make instruments, make peace t-shirts, and then join the concert.
That is very fun. There's so much to do. It's beyond just walking around.
It is beyond just walking
There's
around.
So
Although
much.
You can do that.
Although
you can just
that.
Walk around.
And that is really good. It's good stuff up there. And also, there's DNA Info had a really interesting story about a project coming up called VoiceOver, more of a art/audio installation that sounds really interesting, of kind of voices of everyday Chicagoans answering questions. That sounds exciting.
Right. So there's a community-based group that we partner with called Friends of Bloomingdale Trail, and they're actually the ones who can take a big portion of the credit for getting the 606 built. They formed as a group back in 2003 and started really lobbying to get this thing done. So they're partnering with the artist of VoiceOver, and they're going to erect a listening station where people can respond to prompts and tell their stories. And then the stories will be curated, and then people can then pop in and listen to those same stories.
That's very cool. And I love I think there's something very, very freeing when you give people permission to answer something very vulnerably, mm-hmm. a very specific thing through anonymity, when they're just kind of allowed to go right to the deep end instead
right.
of, hey, what's up? You know, starting with what's the meaning of life?
Right. Or
what, you know, starting somewhere really good and powerful is really lovely. Well, thank you so much for being with us tonight, Caroline O'Boyle, Director of Programs and Partnerships for the 606. I am so excited. I can't even stay off the 606. It's so beautiful.
Well, don't
fun.
Stay off. Come on out. Everybody should.
I keep showing back up. I have missed apparently some parades and some stuff, but I'll work on that. Definitely look for me at the next second Friday of the month thing, because that sounds pretty cool to play with telescopes.
Yeah, come on out.
As long as, you know, adults are welcome too, and it's not just for kids.
Of course. No, it's a lot of adults.
Good, because I like space stuff. And we're going to be talking about that in just a bit. On the other side of news, we're talking with someone from the Adler. So we shall be right back. Max Grinnell is in studio with us, co-hosting, talking all about the wonderful summer things right here in Chicago. Back in just a bit on 720 WGN.
There's a star.
Us, 720 WGN. Shout out to that song. We're just going to let that play for a minute because that's beautiful. Oh, so good. So good. We are talking tonight about all the cool things to do in Chicago in the summer. And this summer in particular, we have this very cool thing happening, and that is this big time solar eclipse. It's on August 21st. And so to talk about that with us, Michelle Nichols is in studio. She is master educator in the astronomy department at the Adler Planetarium. And also Max Grinnell, the urbanologist, is here. We're talking history. We're talking stars and planets and all this cool stuff. I'm so excited about this eclipse. And we were talking a little bit before the break about what people have done when they did not realize an eclipse was coming, and sometimes good and sometimes bad results there on that one. But in particular, you were talking about in the late 1800s, some two ends of that extreme of where that went really, really well and really, really badly.
Yeah, it helps to know when an eclipse happens. And so if you don't know one's going to happen, then suddenly the sky goes dark and people flip out, as we said before. For the 1878 eclipse, part of the path went through Texas, And there was a family that didn't know it was going to happen, and the father went crazy and killed his family.
Lord.
Because he thought the world was ending.
Hmm.
Literally, he thought the world was ending.
Well, if you look up and you see what you think is a hole in the sky, you're like, I'm going to...
I get it.
I'm not doing that.
Yeah. But the other end of the extreme is when you do know it's going to happen and people can get excited about it. The United States' first female astronomer, first professional female astronomer, Mariah Mitchell, highly recommend looking up books on her. She's pretty cool. She led all female expeditions, science expeditions to Burlington, Iowa, and Denver, Colorado for two separate eclipses, 1869, I think it was, and 1878. And people came out to see them do science, to watch them set
to
their telescopes
women
up.
Do science.
To watch women do science. Mm.
That's very cool. That's super interesting. You know, I wonder too, I mean, we were opened the show talking a bit about the way we think about leisure time, the way we think about public space, the way we think about a lot of things that have changed over time. And I can't help but think a little bit about Mars, because something we've had a fascination with for a long time, and you know, for a time it was this very unattainable sci-fi thing, and even before that it was about the angry gods and this, you know, powerful angry force. But now we have, you know, we have Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos trying to make colonies and make, you know, and make cargo ships exist and all these things where you can get an Amazon order to Mars, to the moon, all these things. And I think that's so fascinating to shift from people coming out to watch this celestial event, to look at the skies with awe, and shifting to now this sense of wanting to conquer them, which is interesting, especially right now. Here we are on the July 4th was the anniversary of the Pathfinder's landing on Mars. So it's kind of an interesting time to kind of compare our thinking about Mars. And to me, it's interesting that we, you know, there it was 20 years ago, this, like, set this thing on here and see what happens versus let's conquer it.
Yeah, the Pathfinder mission was pretty amazing, because it landed a lander that contained a rover about the size of a large shoebox. And for about 30 days, this thing was driven around Mars. And you couldn't help but think of Mars as a place, because you get these pictures back, and there were cameras on Pathfinder watching the rover called Sojourner. And, I mean, Sojourner would go over here, sniff some rocks, go over there, sniff some more rocks. And we really started to get some more data that said, hey, there may have been water here at some point. Mm. And when you start really thinking like that, you go, wow, this is a place. This is a place that maybe was like Earth in the past. How far right. in the past was that? When did this happen?
When is this our future?
Yeah. And so all the missions that have come on after that have been following the water. Where's the water? Mm-hmm. But more and more we're learning how Mars's history, how it has changed. And it's really cool. But the space program in general is now getting more attainable. You've got these little tiny satellites going up called CubeSats that are 4 inches on a side. They're literally little cubes, and they get sent up. There was one sent up by the country of Ghana just a few days ago. Ghana has its own satellite, and it is literally 4 inches on a side. But they now have a space program. It's really awesome. And this is becoming more and more attainable for a lot of people. So, yeah, let's see if Jeff Bezos and Elon Musk can send us to Mars. Buy those Tesla cars and see if that supports the space program. Who knows? So right. I'm not necessarily endorsing Tesla.
Sure.
But it's a nice connection.
Whatever funds the space exploration, indeed. Well, I think that's an interesting thing that hits a lot of industries, right? That we, even social media, how it's made publishing accessible to so many people, how, you know, the idea that anybody can have a blog, and if it's quality and interesting, people will find it and people will elevate it. And I think that that's kind of this thing that suddenly it's very attainable to have a space program.
Right after the Spirit and Opportunity rovers landed in 2004, there was a blog that got put up. I don't know who did it, but it was Opportunity as a Valley Girl. And you got to hear or see or read opportunities, in air quotes, reactions to being on Mars in the voice of a California Valley girl. It was hysterical. But it really it really grew on people that they went, oh, I can, that's cool. It's not just the scientists in their white lab coats, which we don't wear like white lab coats, by the way. And they're being funny and they're normal, they're human. And so, yeah, it was a lot of fun to see that.
I know sometimes this comes up in science and medicine, the kind of eternal struggle between public information, public knowledge, and kind of the need to open a really complicated thing that you spend years and years of academic study getting into, but in order to communicate it and distill it to the public, it has to be kind of bite-sized because we don't have PhDs necessarily. And there's this kind of tendency, I think, where we see it in the medical world, it's like, this pill cures this. When it's like, well, we have seen in one lab rat this happened, you know, and details like that. What are those very frustrating misconceptions that you feel people have around your field?
The Big Bang was not a bang. A black hole is not a hole. Planetary nebulae have nothing to do with planets. It happens all the time. So a lot of it happens to do with the names. The names are terrible in some cases. But I think some of the problem stems from astronomy is not as covered in school as other subjects. It may not be thought to be as important as, say, biology, chemistry, physics.
Sure.
But biology, chemistry, physics are great foundations for basically all of astronomy. But that's where the Adler Planetarium comes in. That's where we are there to help translate this information for the public and make it cool. Show you how cool this stuff really is. Yeah. Explain what those black holes are and where they come from. And no, we're not going to fall into one. And as far as we know. Right. And no, there aren't any asteroids headed toward Earth as far as we know. And so stuff like that. That's where we excel. And that's where we want everyone to come along with us and come along for the ride, because astronomy is just growing by leaps and bounds every single day. So much new information.
Yeah. I mean, it's such an exciting frontier. It's so underexplored. And for as much as we have seen it, I mean, the idea of even conquering something in space is so fascinating and so interesting, but it's still, even as much as we know about it, we'll still look up and say, oh, look at the moon. It's so beautiful. You know, I think it still inspires great awe in us.
And that's the greatest thing is you go, oh, that new thing about Mars, I can look up in the sky and put Mars, that thing right there, or the moon. Here's a moon rock. This moon rock that you can touch, it's a piece of that thing in the sky right there. It's not something you can only see through a microscope or something like that. So that's also where we have our Scopes in the City telescope outreach program. We take telescopes to places all over the city and show people this sky. It is not thoroughly hopeless. With all the light pollution we have, we can see the moon, we can see planets, we can see cool stuff. And we've met thousands of people doing this. And it's just a little community that builds up around this telescope for an hour or two. And it's a lot of fun to see people's reactions when they see things through a telescope, mostly for the first time.
Yeah. Where can people find out about when those are happening?
So go to the Adler Planetarium's website and you can just search for Scopes in the City. We've got one of the menus that we have. I think it's the What's Here menu. You can search for look for the Scopes in the City link, click that, and we've got our list. We're always adding to it, so if you don't see someplace near you, come back a few weeks later. I'm always adding places. I'm in charge of that list. So
cool.
We've got a few more coming up.
All right, and we're going to find you on August 21st at the big old eclipse party that you have going on.
Well, actually, I'll be in Carbondale for that big old eclipse party going there in Southern Illinois University, so we'll have a small team there. But the big Adler contingent is going to be at the Adler Planetarium that day, partying on. Come with us.
That's fun. Any other big events happening at Adler this summer that we should not miss?
We've got our monthly Adler After Dark.
Those are fun.
Yeah, 21 and over event. We have solar observing as much as we can, with telescopes out every day to see the sun, weather permitting. We've got our Chasing Eclipses exhibit on right now, so you can come and see what it's like to actually chase and go to see a total solar eclipse. So it's a lot of fun at the Adler.
Cool. Now, if we can't get to that party, where in the world do we get solar viewing glasses in time for the eclipse?
So every Chicago Public Library branch between August 14th and the 21st, while supplies last, walk into any branch. You'll get, if you're a teen or an adult, you will get up to two pairs of glasses. You don't even have to show a library card. You don't even have to be a City of Chicago resident. So they'll have glasses at every branch to hand out while they last. I believe Adler members are getting glasses at the Adler. So if you come to the Adler and you're a member, ask for some glasses. I think we're doing those while supplies last as well. So don't wait too long. So yeah, there's ways to get them. And we're listing on our website places where you can go and get them as well.
Cool. This is very exciting. This is so cool. I'm so excited for August 21st to see this cool, cool eclipse. Well, thank you so much, Michelle Nichols, master educator in the astronomy department at Adler Planetarium. Thank you for being with us. Maybe check in with us during the eclipse.
Oh, that would be great.
I know you'll probably be busy that day, but that'd be kind of cool.
That'd be fun.
Field correspondent from in the center of the eclipse. That'd be cool.
We might be able to make something happen. Let us know.
I like it. Cool. All right. We're going to take a little break and get you to news, all that good stuff. When we come back, we are talking with a group that does very cool theater productions with hiking. It sounds kind of funny, but it works and it's very, very cool. Back in just a bit on 720 WGN. WGN. Hey, it's Amy Guth here on the Saturday Night Special, and our next guest, Paige Domokaitis, is president of the board of directors for Theater Hikes, which is a really, really fun idea that combines exactly what it sounds like, theater and hiking. Paige, welcome to the program.
Hi. Well, it's great to be here.
Thanks so much for joining us. So I'm so interested in this idea of combining these two things, and I'm immediately thinking of certain theatrical productions that would really lend themselves to being outside. But talk us through how Theater Hikes, how it works, and what the experience is like for viewers.
Sure. The basic idea is that we want people to enjoy the outdoors, and we want to really get excited about all these nature trails and parks that we have and realize that, you know, you can do theater out of the box. And you can go out and be very creative, very interactive. And instead of sitting in one spot and having the scenery painted and all sorts of things changed. Instead of that, when the scene changes, we tell everyone to grab all their gear and we move on to another location. And this definitely allows us in certain plays, if there's a brook, then we go look for a location with a brook. If we need three or four trees for them to pop out of, then we look for a location to find three or four trees. And also, it's very interactive as we go on the hikes. Not only can they ask me questions, but all of our actors like to interact with the audience as their character. And it kind of brings everyone into the journey. So it is truly a different kind of show.
Sounds like it. And so in addition to being president of the board of directors, you're also the hike leader. So you're walking people through these productions kind of in a, I imagine that's something kind of half narrator, half house manager. That sounds like you're wearing a half stage manager, like part, you know, sounds like you're wearing a lot of hats at the same time there.
It is. But it did get a lot simpler. In 2011, they decided that we would have stage managers for the shows while we were doing the hikes, which definitely took the pressure off of me because as a hike leader, you used to have to carry all the props, you know, because we basically have a big wagon. And you would have to do that and also talk to the crowd and also try and manage everything. So it's a lot simpler now that we have stage managers to deal with that.
Yeah, I can see that being a lot.
Yeah, so I'm very grateful for that. But it is kind of like a house manager. I talk to the box office. I am in contact with the actors and the stage manager, just making sure everybody's ready at the start of the show, at the start of a scene. You know, if there's a problem, they kind of give me a signal, and I kind of vamp for a while. I ask questions. I've, you know,
You do it all.
Audience. do a little dance, whatever, is very entertaining and keeps them engaged in the performance until everybody's ready to go. So it's kind of like a tour guide. It's for me, it's a lot of fun. It's very interactive, and you never really know what an audience is going to come up and ask you.
I'm sure. Sure. And so it
keeps it fresh.
I bet. And so how did Theater Hikes first come to be? What is the origin story of this organization?
As one of our founding members, Frank Farrell, told it to us, in 2001 is when Theater Hikes was born. And Frank was an actor at the time, and he went out in the woods and started rehearsing his lines. And all of a sudden, he started hearing how wonderful he sounded out there, and especially Shakespeare. There's a lot of wooded scenes, and he just thought, hey, wouldn't it be great if instead of sitting in one spot, the audience came with us and we found different locations for these scenes that were appropriate and did the show.
I think that's such an interesting challenge for the idea of a set designer then becomes kind of a location scout also, which is kind of an interesting idea. So right now you have Midsummer Night's Dream going for the rest of July. I can immediately, that seems like the perfect play to be doing on a hike that would lend itself so well to just having that natural scenery. What are some other productions that you've done in the last couple of seasons that just worked so perfectly in the woods?
It's surprising how many do work in the woods. I really loved our version of Peter Pan, especially because we did get near some water locations, and the crocodile in that particular production was a hand puppet that was like all arms. So we had several different people who played the crocodile.
Oh, that'd be fun.
Yeah, and the kids loved the crocodile puppet.
Sure.
We did Alice in Wonderland.
Oh, that would
be fun. A little while ago.
The first time I ever saw Midsummer was at a Shakespeare in the Park, and it was in Fort Worth, Texas, and very where I'm from, and very kind of wooded around this cool stage. And they also used a bunch of these kind of cool old magnolia trees that had just been there forever, and they really incorporated that. So that's kind of the stuff I'm picturing, but I'm sure it's even cooler to have it all out in the woods.
Yeah, I mean, we really try to match the location with the scene as best we can, and we're overwhelmed, really, by the responses that we get. And even when we, I think it was the second weekend we did North Park Village Nature Center, the gal who plays Hermia, she was asking, you know, the kids to help her find Lysander, and they got so involved. They were literally picking up her props and, like, calling out his name. And the next scene, they said, did you find him? Did you
Aww,
see him?
That's so cute.
No, we still haven't found him. And the kids were so excited, and they really got into it. And that's really what, for us, that's what Theater Hike is. It's about the play.
That's so fun.
It's about the production.
And
it's a journey, really, not just physically, but to really get into the story. I've said it to many people now. There's something very magical about Midsummer in the dark when all the actors are lit up, and it's just so. We were excited when he pitched it to the board, and to actually see it is something really marvelous.
So how do you light them? Are they're holding their own lights? How does that work?
They their antenna are lit, are light.
Oh, that's cool.
So that lights their faces.
Oh, that's
their
fun.
Wings light up, and they also have running lights that kind of switch gears, and sometimes depending on how the actor moves, their running lights in their costumes make it really speedy and then make it really slow. Just by their own little movements.
That's so fun. That is such a creative idea. I love that. What is the show that you've been chasing that you haven't been able to do yet, but you would love to work into a future season?
Ooh, that's a tough one.
I put you on the spot with that one.
We actually have been wanting to do Midsummer Night's Dream for quite a long time because it's one of the requests that we get very often. I would love to do... back in the day, 2004 was my first official year with Theater Hikes, and I did a show called In the Garden of Live Flowers, which is very little... It was a little off the beaten path, but it was such a great show, and it involved a lot of mime. There was so much creativity. You literally had six people on a couple benches, and it looked like they were on a train ride.
Oh, that's fun.
And there was a dream sequence where two girls played co-pilots, and so the one who was in back was the wings. And when they were talking, whoever wasn't talking was making the noise the plane made.
That's what I mean. I'm just imagining all the creative things you'd have to do because you wouldn't necessarily have, you know, Foley, you know, someone there making sound effects for you or light cues, and even set, like you said, would, you know, to be a train or plane would makes kind of a you have to have a different approach, I imagine. And so, what is the length of these hikes generally?
Typical theater hikes production is right around 2.5 to 3 hours with the hike. Although if you go to one of the children's productions, like Around the World in 8 Plays, it'll probably be a little shorter, probably closer to 2 hours. But it is really, really fun. And I would definitely say that Midsummer Night's Dream is one of those in which the actors literally become more than artists because they are lit themselves. They play their own music. They dance during the production. They interact throughout with the audience. And it's quite magical, especially the last few scenes when it's very dark. Mm-hmm. And they are literally just lit by themselves and a couple different flashlights.
That's so cool.
It is beautiful.
I'm going to have to come see that. That sounds so cool. That's one of my favorite plays. I super love that. So we keep saying the woods, but there are many locations where people can visit and check this out around town. One of them is Morton Arboretum, which sounds very perfect for all of this, but also in Horner Park and North Park Village. Like, you're around. You go to a lot of different places for these productions.
Yes, and I think that also helps the actors really get into the idea of interacting with the space they're in, interacting with the audience as well. We go to Horner Park, we go to Wicker Park, we did Loyola Park, Pullman Historic Site, which is a great place, very friendly people and beautiful space to work in. Trying to think, because there's North Park Village Nature Center, very beautiful place as well.
That's 5800 Pulaski, kind of in there.
Yeah, it's Pulaski and just a little past Irving Park.
Yeah, that is a cool spot. And so what is coming up on the season for the rest of this year that we can look forward to?
Midsummer Night's Dream is running through July here at Morton. Next weekend, we start previews for Around the World in 8 Plays, which is our children's production, which is a bunch of different shows from different nations. So different stories that you probably haven't heard before. Czechoslovakia, South Africa, Japan, Russia, India, Native America. There's a Celtic story in there as well. Then we have Complete History of America, which, if anyone is familiar with the complete history of or complete works of William Shakespeare, abridged and revised, mm-hmm. It's basically the same idea. It's kind of a comical look at America and the history of America, and it's very fast-paced but very fun. And in the fall, we have, I believe it's called The Nightfall, and it's all about Edgar Allan Poe. So it's told through his eyes, but it's The Telltale Heart, the Raven, all kind of the stories that we know and love, and it's very, very appropriate for October.
That sounds super fun. Where is that one going to be?
If you look on our website, you can look at all the different locations that it'll be on. But for sure, it'll be at Morton and North Park Village Nature Center. And I think it's over at Pullman Historic Site as well. I'd have to double check.
Lots of cool places. This is such a fun idea. I think this is such a great idea. And as I'm sitting here talking with you, I'm thinking of even more plays that would be so cool to see out in nature, bringing two really cool things together, theater and the outdoors. I love it. It's such a good idea, and it sounds super fun. I'm going to come to one for sure, probably the Edgar Allan Poe, if I cannot make it to Midsummer. But I'm going to try to get to both. That is super fun. Well, and so people can go to theater-hikes.
Theater-hikes.org.
And then where can we find you on social media and all that kind of good stuff?
If you go onto our website, you'll see the little box for Facebook and the little Tweety Bird for Twitter. And you can definitely link us up with that way.
Sounds great. So we will, everybody, go connect with Theater Hikes on social media and go to the website to see the seasons and or see the shows in the season and all of the locations where they are going to be playing, because this sounds super, super fun. Well, Paige Domokaitis, thank you so much for being with us today. We will see you out in the woods, I suppose, at some point very soon.
Yes, we'd love for anybody to come out and see us on the trails and come take a journey with us.
Wonderful. We shall do that for sure. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
WGN. It's Amy Guth, and this is the Saturday Night Special, and we have had so much fun tonight talking all about cool summer stuff in Chicago, because we all know and talk about the big summer music festivals, and we all know those are coming. We can't miss them. They're everywhere. So we've been hanging out, kind of talking about other things that stretch our creativity a bit and get us outside and moving around and not looking at our phones and just doing all that good stuff. And Max Grinnell, the urbanologist, has been in studio hanging out with us tonight. And we have talked with a lot of people tonight, Max, that have been so interesting and so smart and have just made me very excited for the eclipse and for
me too.
To go to plays and to do all the things and get back on the 606 yet again and all that kind of cool stuff. And, you know, as I think through, I thought in particular, I really loved how the 606 and the Adler had a partnership there, and they were really doing so many things on the 606 to bring community together, which kind of, you know, is where we started. You know, at the very beginning of the show, you and I were talking about how the idea of leisure time has changed and how the idea of, how we wrestle with access and what that means, and how the 606 is really kind of the perfect thing for that because of how connective it is to different areas of the city. But I thought it was very cool. Caroline O'Boyle, who is here, she's the director of programs and partnerships for the 606. She was talking about how, in fact, it was righting a wrong that at one point the train line was lower and neighborhoods were connected, but by elevating the train line in the name of safety, it kind of made a wall run through neighborhoods.
Right. And it's funny because we were just talking about great institutions in Hyde Park, because when that happened with the Illinois Central in Hyde Park, they elevated it there. That was a game changer for the community too.
Yeah.
And if folks haven't been to places like the Hyde Park Art Center and the Smart Museum of Art at the University of Chicago campus, both in Hyde Park, both three, those are gems that are really embedded in their respective communities and completely free.
Yeah.
Too. Kind of just great places to go on and check both of them out.
Right. We have so much great, so many free resources here that are just cool things to do. I know there's a lot of controversy around lakefront art because I think you either love it or you hate it.
Right.
Like people are like, what is that giant chain of stuff? It's red, it's weird, I don't know. And some people go, no, it means this, and it's about breaking free of things. So I think everybody has really strong opinions about lakefront art here in particular.
Yeah. Look at the deer on the river. People. Many deer thoughts.
Oh my God. That filled social media for days when it was first put up. I was like, guys, let it go. There's stuff happening in the White House. You gotta pay attention.
Can't just this it's great this deer is here.
Now I do enjoy when people kind of play with perspective a little bit. If you're up on Wacker looking down at the deer, you know, right as like a pedestrian is walking in just the right way, it looks like it's running up the deer's nose, or if you're holding the camera in the right way, it looks like a tiny little dog the size of an ant next to the deer. So people kind of play with that on Instagram a little bit. Those are entertaining.
Yeah, absolutely. And it truly like filled that Instagram space. Like, boom.
The deer. Boom. And it did what any launch should do. Suddenly it, you know, it's all there. And we opened the program by talking about kind of summer of yesteryear and things that happened in Chicago back in the day of amusement parks that are gone. And even that too, when pieces of, particularly the one on the north side, when that one was closed down and disassembled, the very nostalgic photos that filled social media. Even photos of a photo of an old family photo of this day we were here, this day that this happened. That was really interesting and powerful.
Yeah. And it's funny because I was thinking about this too. In Borasco Village, there's still the Riverview Tavern, which has some of those items. From, you know, people, you know, it's part of people's everyday special experiences in the city of Chicago that I think really resonates with folks.
And I don't think, I'm sure if we walked into Riverview Tavern right now and asked people, what is this named for? What does this place mean to you? I bet half of the people there would just be like, I don't know.
Microbrew.
There's a river here.
Right. There's a river.
I'm probably seeing.
I have a view. Yeah. Boom. That's all I need to know.
But then there would be other people say, I come here because this is special and this thing on the wall means this. And I saw this and I knew this. And, you know, I say this all the time, but I do love it. And Chicago is the biggest small town in the world. And not only are we all just a few degrees away from each other, but also it's so interesting how we layer history on top of history in interesting ways. I think as we were talking about the 606, I think that's a great example of what we've done with a piece of history that's moved it, changed it, elevated it, re-elevated it, changed it, and we keep layering on top of it. All kind of good stuff. We could keep talking for days, Max.
We could.
But alas, we have run out of time. So that does it for us tonight on the Saturday Night Special. Be sure and join us next week. We are going to be talking about tattoos. That should be a very, very interesting show. So we'll see you back here next Saturday. Max Grinnell, thank you so much for being with us.
Great to be here.
Everybody, connect with him. Go to theurbanologist.com. Find him on social media. He always has lots of good information and cool things to do and know. So definitely follow him. We'll see you next time.